And so you just have to keep your mindset. As soon as I fail enough times, I'm going to figure this out and be successful. Most people who never get where they want to go and don't achieve the success that they're wanting to is because they did not put themselves in enough positions to fail.
Welcome to the Get Clear with Crystal Ware podcast, the place where we get clear on our goals, own our worth, and learn to be the CEOs of our own lives. I'm your host, Crystal Ware, lawyer and former Fortune 500 corporate leader who found the confidence to say goodbye to a lucrative career and start my own business. Now I'm opening up the playbook and sharing everything I've learned to get you there faster. It may not be easy, but it will always be worth it because you are made for more. So put on your big girl pants, jump on board, and let's reach for the stars. Are you ready to get clear? Today on the show is an amazing, amazing woman from right here in Texas, about an hour and a half away from me. This is Katie Neeson. She is an ex-commercial banker turned real estate entrepreneur. She started in real estate by buying a one-bedroom condo for the low price of $17,000 20 years ago. Gosh, that is unheard of these days. And today, her passion is reviving the downtown of her hometown, Bryan, Texas, by designing, building, and renovating boutique apartments, mixed-use buildings, townhomes, and cottage clusters. She teaches other real estate investors how to employ restorative, sustainable redevelopment strategies to build wealth for themselves and for the communities. So that is why I really wanted to have Katie on. So much about this resonates with me. So many things that I'm interested in, that I love, that women and working moms can take away and grow what they do, how they manage their time, how they work, and making money and wealth for themselves. So thank you and welcome to the show, Katie.
Man, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk to your audience, the women out there that are looking to just be, to level up themselves.
Yeah. So I know you had a little bit of a head start being an ex-banker, but tell me how you really got into real estate. And I know at some point, like many of us working moms, you had one of those aha moments of, oh my gosh, I really got to get out of corporate and do something more sustainable for my family. So can you tell us a little bit more about that in your background and how you kind of got started?
Yeah, I would love to. Well, first, let me tell you, I actually loved my job. It was super high stress and we worked a lot of hours, but I loved the people I worked with. I loved my customers. I did love my job. Really, what changed my trajectory in corporate world is, because I was convinced I was going to climb up that ladder, is I had a son. And I wasn't sure that I even wanted kids. And my husband was like, I will stay home from my job if you just let us have a child. And I was like, fine, but this is not going to get in the way of my career. And then I had a kid and I loved him and I never got to spend much time with him. And it was just a weekend away when he was about 18 months old. We were on a road trip to a horse show, actually. And we were talking about like 5-year, 10-year, 20-year goals. And I realized, oh my God, I am in a job that is not leading me where I actually want to go. And that weekend, we made a decision. We're going to move back to our hometown. I quit my job within a week. And during that time, from transitioning from that job to a job back in my hometown, I was introduced to the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it's how lots of real estate investors get started. But the irony for me, or the light bulb moment for me, is that my family grew up in real estate. My mom has been a real estate broker for 47 years. My dad was a subcontractor here in town. In the 80s in Texas and California with the S&L crisis, it was horrible on the real estate industry, and we lost everything. So I did not want to do real estate because of that experience. But the light bulb moment for me in Rich Dad, Poor Dad was I realized it wasn't real estate that was the cause of our problems. It was just the lack of financial knowledge. And my parents are amazing, super smart people, but they came from nothing, and their earning potential way outpaced their financial education. And so that was just part of the education process. I thought it was because of real estate. So while real estate is in cycles and it can be risky, it wasn't the core reason why we went through financial struggles. So once I realized that, I was like, actually, I like real estate. I understand credit underwriting. I grew up in real estate. And within probably 2 months of that, I bought that $17,000 condo.
Wow. Well, that is a lot to unpack. So let me start with the first thing that you said was, and I think I'm quoting close to what you said here, but then I had a son and I loved him, because that really resonates, because my aunt, who is only 10 or 12 years older than me, she never wanted to have kids. And then she didn't think they could have kids. And woes, then she turned out pregnant. And it totally changed the trajectory of her life as well. And it's like, you don't really understand. And I think that is what is hard. You, a hard-hitting type A woman, same as me, like, you have this plan for your life and you know, maybe you didn't. I knew I wanted to have kids. That would just fit into my life. It wasn't going to change what I was doing. But then at some point, it really does change. And I think that's the hardest thing, is we can say that to young ladies all day long, but you really don't know until you're there.
Totally. It changes your life. And you're like, no, no, no. I love my life. I don't want it to change. All I can say is I get that. I was there. I didn't really like kids. I wasn't really sure if I was going to like my own kids. And so I was like, why would, if everyone tells you your life's going to change, why do I want to change this? Like, it's great. But what I can assure you is, like, it changes everything, but it's all better. It's just a different season in life. And like that season was amazing, but I don't miss that season. I love the season with kids just as much.
Yeah. Well, and I think it will, you know, really resonate with people. It definitely resonates with me that I also loved my job. I wanted to be a VP at a company. I wanted to maybe even be an executive at some point. Like, I wanted to go and do it all.
Yes.
And then I realized that having that title, having that job, was not going to have the life. It would give me the job satisfaction that I wanted. So discerning your job satisfaction and understanding your motivation, and then the bigger picture of your whole life, that's what I think is difficult. And yeah, kids can fit into your life no matter what your life is. You can make it all work. But what you want out of your life, I think, really changes at that point. And for me, it didn't happen until really my kids were like 3, 4, 5, and COVID highlighted everything that was going on. But kudos to you. So what do you credit with the, I don't know, the bravery, the courage that you had to, like, literally have this weekend away and then say, oh my God, we are going to uproot things. We are going to change. I'm quitting my job, literally, in 7 to 10 days. How did you have the courage to go for that?
Well, I was under the false illusion that my job was security. And so that was like an epiphany moment for me too. I'd always had an entrepreneurial spirit, but I totally bought into go to college and get a good job. And I was the first one to graduate from college in my family. That was absolutely the right path for me because it showed me a whole new world. But I assumed that because of that, that I basically, my future was better entrusted in their hands. And when I read this book and started thinking about, like, my life and my parents, and the, you know, they were entrepreneurial, self-employed, that I really was putting all of my risk in someone, all of my faith in someone else's hands. And I grew up fiercely independent. And that realization was like, why am I doing this? I need to be in control of my own life. So what shifted for me, not that I went, okay, so I don't need a job anymore. I'm just going to go do real estate full time. That did not happen. That's what I wanted to do. That did not happen. But what changed for me is I decided I was going to work for education instead of work for money. So I went to work for a startup company taking care of people with Alzheimer's and dementia. And I just wanted to work for the co-founders because they were so smart. And I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I needed that exposure to learn from them. And so I was like, what can I do for y'all? And they were like, I don't know. We're building and growing. You want to do real estate? I was like, I don't know anything about it. They're like, we don't either. Said, sounds like a good fit. So I just did it. And so I would look for markets, sub-markets, buy the property and build out the home for the people with Alzheimer's and dementia, get it licensed by the state and turn it over to them. And love that. It was a remote job. I was building in San Antonio and Houston. living in Bryan. So it was great. I had a lot of autonomy, and it let me start dabbling in real estate on the side in my home market. So I could do both of them concurrently, and they knew about it. They were super supportive of it. And now they're my two biggest investors in my projects, because what happened 7 years later, they sold the company. And that's what gave me the courage and the leeway I had prepared during that 7 years to work for myself. Selling the company basically gave me the leeway to do that. And I thought, you know what, in a year, if I'm out of money, I'll just go get another job. So that's what I did. And that was probably, I don't know, 8 or so years ago. And I fortunately to this point haven't had to get another job. But you know, if I do, I do.
What I think is really fascinating for people to understand is that you were in one industry, you were in one career, and you knew or had an idea that you needed a certain skill set. How did you go about finding this company, these two entrepreneurs to work for? And how did you go about proposing yourself to working with them?
Yeah, this is a good question, and hopefully it'll be applicable. And I know lots of people out there will be like, oh, you were just lucky. But you know, luck is created by the circles that you're in, right? So I went to church back when I lived in San Antonio with one of these gentlemen, and I had always admired him because he was basically a serial entrepreneur, but he was as intimidating as hell. So he was in like the friend circle, but I hardly ever talked to him or approached him or anything. I just kind of admired him from afar. So his wife ran the church. They were a client of mine at the bank, the church itself. So I interacted with her some. Well, when I left to go back to my hometown, my banker coworker called me and said, hey, this guy that I had admired, he needs a small business loan. I worked for a really large bank. They were like, we're never going to do that loan. Why don't you give him a call? Because when I quit my job and moved back home for a very short stint of time, I worked for a local startup bank. And so I called him from like day one on the job. I was like, hey, I hear you need a loan. And so he became a customer of mine. And now we're like 3 hours apart, right? And so one day when I realized the bank that I was working for wasn't going to be a long-term position for me due to a number of personality issues, I said, you know what? I can't tell people in my hometown because it's a small town. If I tell them, I'm going to lose control of when I quit the bank and it's going to get out to everybody, right? So I started strategically telling people. And since he wasn't in my town, I was like, hey, I am looking for a change in career. I'm not sure what I want to do. I know I want to get a job for an education. I want to learn about building businesses. And he was like, I would love for you to come work for us. And he goes, but we don't have anything open. And that's what started the conversation. It was several months later before the opportunity came up and we worked the details out. But it was really me communicating with him what I was trying to do and then planting that seed. And then the opportunity came up later.
I love that. It's kind of like some advice I've given before where you want to ask somebody that you're interested in either mentoring you, working with, whatever the case may be, ask them something similar to, this is what I'm looking at doing. How would you approach this? Because instead of saying, I want to pick your brain, which yes. Then people are like, I don't have time for that. You're asking for a specific, practical, tactical answer to something, which people feel then that they are an expert, that you're looking for expertise, and how would you do this? And they're more likely to answer the. And in what you subtly planted the seed that maybe she will be available to work with me at some point. And I think that's a really creative way. You're right. Luck does not happen. It is things being aligned at the right time, in the right circle, with the right people, and with the right approach.
Absolutely. You got to be intentional with those strategic people in your life. And I honestly never thought that he would say, hey, do you want to work for me? For one, he took care of people with Alzheimer's and dementia, which was no expertise that I had. But knowing that his exposure to a bigger world, like he would be a connector. And so it was done without it thinking he would hire me. But then once he proposed that, then I was like, oh yeah, that's where I need
to go. Yeah, absolutely. So I know one of the other things that you talk about on social media that you've shared with people is money mindsets, which I think is really, really impactful and empowering for women, especially to dive into, to think about what might be holding them back from creating the wealth, from creating the income that they want to see. And you had a lot of fear around money at one point. And I know you kind of alluded to that when you're talking about rich dad, poor dad. Can you tell us more in detail about that and how you got past it?
Yeah, I would say really it was probably a fear of failure even more than a fear of money. And so my husband's a working cowboy, which I love, but that is not the breadwinning role in the family, right? And so I was the higher income earner, but we chose for him to do that because that's the way of life we wanted for our kids and how we wanted to bring them up. But it added extra pressure on me as far as I can't just like quit and not have income replace it. And so I had a really high fear of failure. And then I was talking with a mentor, and I was telling him about my situation. I was like, this is what I want to do. I have reserves set aside. I have a plan. He's like, well, why haven't you done it? And I'm like, well, because I'm afraid. What if I fail? And he was just silent. And he said, what if you fail? So what? What would happen? Like, what's worst case scenario? And I'm like, well, I would have a lot of debt. If I'm in real estate, we could go into bankruptcy. And he was just quiet. And he goes, well, if that happened, then what would you do? And I was like, well, I mean, I'd probably get there a lot faster the next time around because I would have the knowledge and the information, but I would totally be embarrassed. I may have to leave my hometown and people would judge me. And he goes, yep, okay. So what if you don't do any of that and you stay exactly where you are? Do you have fear around that? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, what's the fear? I'm like, that I never took the chance to have the opportunity. And he goes, so you could fail and then rebound based on the knowledge you have, or you could stay where you're at and fail from day one, basically, because you never took a chance to succeed. So which do you prefer? And it was so clear to me. I was like, oh my gosh, my fear is never trying to do what I really want to. Worst case scenario, I could just go get another job, right? I was looking for a job when I found one or when I had my last one. And if I do fail but want to stay in the industry, like you, they can't take your knowledge away. They may be able to take all your money away and it may be risky, but at the end of the day, it's just money. And I think that's the biggest fear is people put, or problem, is people put so much weight on money. And money is just a medium of exchange. And so we started out with nothing. We could go back to nothing, but it doesn't mean that should keep us from trying to gain a lot. And that's when I realized the worst thing I can do is not ever take a chance.
Yeah, because regret is final. Failure is temporary.
Yes. And failure is education. And now with my kids, we used to sit around the dinner table and for conversation, we would say, okay, what did you fail at today? I wanted to hear one failure for the day because, you know, we're conditioned and school teaches us and just the way that we interact with each other teaches us failure means you did something wrong. And that is so backward. Failure means that you took a chance, which was doing something right. You may not have gotten the end result, but like rarely do you get the end result the first time you try, right? Whether it's walking or playing a sport or whatever it is. But for some reason, we think the older we get that failure is less and less acceptable. And I think that is completely wrong. They always say, oh, keep learning, never stop learning. But while you're learning, for some reason, it's not okay to fail anymore. And so you just have to keep your mindset, as soon as I fail enough times, I'm going to figure this out and be successful. Most people who never get where they want to go and don't achieve the success that they're wanting to is because they did not put themselves in enough positions to fail. So if, you know, if I'm talking to someone who rides horses, and I'm like, you know, we have a conversation. I'm like, have you ever been bucked off? If they tell me no, you know what I know? They don't ride horses. If you talk to a snow skier and say, have you ever fallen? And they say no, then you know they're not a snow skier. But for some reason, we put all this pressure around our professional life or starting a business or doing a side hustle and making it permanent that we delineate it and we cannot apply the same to all the ways we learned before to this one thing. And I just think that I think it's wrong.
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting because I think there's this also a similar idea of, you know, it's not okay to fail, or that's in our mind, but that's how we really learn. And in investing in yourself, investing in your business, investing in your own assets, there seems to be a weird cultural dynamic against that as well. Like, people don't hesitate to congratulate you if you get a new $80,000 car. They don't hesitate to congratulate you if you spend $100,000 on going to college or spend $300,000 on buying a house. But if you say you want to spend $50,000 to invest in your new business, a new operation, an investment property, people are like, whoa, too risky. What do you think that is? You know, because I think that really is holding us back too, especially women entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I think that is so true. So my son is 19. He graduated from high school last year. So we have this whole thing about college, right? Do you want to go to college? Do you not want to go to college? And what's crazy is how in such a short amount of time, society says you have to go to college. Mm. And if you don't, what's wrong? Like, why are you choosing not to go to college? So we put it on his plate and we said, look, you can have what little bit of money we've saved up for your education, and you can go and invest with that or do whatever you want with it. Or you can go to college and take out student loans and then become a real estate investor. And he was like, well, I'm going to be like 10 years behind if I do that by the time I go to college, pay for the bills, get a job, repay the student loan debt, and then save up the money. I was like, exactly. So why society says that that's the path, it's not even just for women, it's just for people in general. I mean, I understand why. It's because it's the known path, and because people feel more secure when someone else is in charge of their outcome, which is backward, but it's reality. If you're working for someone else and they have layoffs, you're not at fault for that. You know, like, you were doing what you were supposed to, and they are the ones who are responsible for your failure, which is backwards, but that's how we are conditioned as a society to think. And for whatever reason, we think if our failure is at someone else's feet, then we don't have to take responsibility for it. And I would challenge everyone that is absolutely backward, that you should realize the more control that you give over to someone else, you might be able to steadily bump along, but you give up your ability to really grow quickly. And that's the risk. Everything has risk. Everything has opportunity. And if you're willing to sacrifice the opportunity to put your future in someone else's hands, I'm not judging you for it, but realize that is what you are doing. You are giving up the hockey stick ability by letting because you're working for someone else, right? They're the one trying to create the hockey stick in their life when you're someone else's employee. They're not trying to create a hockey stick in your life. So you have to be the one who says, no, I'm going to be responsible for this and for my own future. But we don't do it because then we take ownership, and that seems scarier to fail on our terms than it does to fail at somebody else's, basically because of what they've given to us.
Absolutely. And I have this conversation with people regularly. I went to college. I also went to law school. There is an opportunity cost to that as well as a financial component. So it's not just the cost of school. It truly is the opportunity cost. And if you have the right connections and you have the right experience and you have the right mentors in your circle, that is worth 1,000 college degrees in my mind. And it's what my husband is a business owner as well. And it's what I talk about with, you know, how we're going to raise our sons, integrating them in, having them be, you know, just hearing a conversation, hearing a negotiation, hearing what we're doing, hearing what we're concerned about, talking about paying taxes. It's like living, you know, learning by living is so much more impactful. And I know that that's not the ability for everybody, right? Like, I am from a very working class family, you know, when people aren't from Texas, and not everybody's even seen Urban Cowboy, which is so crazy, but I'm from Pasadena, and you know, the Pasadena rodeo is like a big deal also. I'm like, I am literally from Urban Cowboy. Okay. And that is like my parents grew up. So they did not go to college. My dad did work at a refinery, and he ended up working an office job and kind of grew into that. But I didn't have those connections or those resources. Had I done that, I might have moved into this kind of career 10 years earlier, but all those same fears were surrounding me. And that is exactly why I wanted to do this podcast and wanted to create a platform for women to help them learn what else is out there a little quicker than I did. So I wanted to get on to a few practical blocking and tackling pieces for people that want to get into to real estate. Okay. So one thing, if you had to say, what is the best advice today for people who want to create enough income to leave their corporate job?
Yeah. So first off, which probably isn't popular, but realize that there are two paths. One is income and one is investing. And the reality is you cannot live off the cash flow of your investments and grow your investment portfolio at the same time. The money can only be used once, and you're either reinvesting it to grow your portfolio or you're spending it to eat, but it can't serve two purposes at the same time. So income is not bad. Income is necessary. Now you have to decide what that income is. It can be a job, or it can be that you are creating income in real estate. So for me, I'm a real estate investor and I'm a real estate professional, and that I have a real estate job. So I have multiple sources of income. I put deals together, I get paid for that. We have a construction company where we build our own projects, we get paid for that. And then the profits and the cash flow from those projects, we invest in the next project. So one is just keep those things separate in your mind, because I think everyone wants to just quit their job and like figure it out. And you can totally do that, but realize those two things are separate and the income has to come from somewhere. Because if you're making $100 a door on a house, it's going to take a whole lot of doors, which takes a lot of capital to be able to just live off that cash flow. So my suggestion is, first goal, figure out what you like. We started buying that condo and then fourplexes and renting them out to Section 8 or low-income housing. We got those fourplexes going. We bought two or three of them really fast, got them leased up, and hated it, hated everything about it, hated the leases, hated the maintenance. And so we pivoted. We sold them all because what we loved was fixing them up. So we sold them all and we started flipping houses. Love that. It totally became our identity. You know, we were like, oh, look at our ego growing. Everyone loves our houses. Started posting on it on social media. And we did love that. But we've been in real estate long enough to know it's a cycle. And at some point that wouldn't work. And we're like, we want to have fixed assets. That's when we sat down and said, what is it that we want? We want beautiful buildings that we can show off. We want things that will be generational wealth and stuff that people in our community like, rather than going, oh my God, another crappy apartment building. So we were able to narrow our focus. So we created income by continuing to flip and sell houses, but then we would take that income and we would put it in our investment portfolio so we could grow both at the same time. So the step one is to figure out what you like and where you want to go. And the best way to do that is you can do that on the side. You can have a rental property. You can have a short-term rental. You can invest in another with someone else in real estate to figure out what you like, because it's just like a job. You got your ladder up on that building and then you get to the top and you're like, oh, this isn't where I want to be. Real estate can be the same way. So play with all of it, figure out what you like, and then come up with the strategy. How do I start the path to get this done? Very few people in real estate have one rental. Many have none. And they try and try and try to get that first one and they just won't pull the trigger. Rarely though, once you get one or two, do you stop there, because the first step is the hardest. And then you're like, okay, I got this. And then the rest become easy. So it's doing what you can to figure out how to convince yourself to take that first step. And if you fail, you spend $100,000 on college. Like, so if you lose $15,000 on a house, seems like a pretty small price to pay. You just move on, figure out what you did wrong, and learn from the next one. So don't set the bar too high and go figure out what you like before you decide your whole future.
Well, I am right there with you. It took me 3 years of looking for a rental property, at which time the appreciation in the neighborhoods I was looking at was almost 25%, Katie. So I really should have capitalized, but I ended up with two rentals, one of which has already doubled in value in less than 5 years. The other one, I guess, is about doubled in value in 7 years. So great locations, I knew, but it took me 3 years to get confident in my ability to identify winners. After I saw that ideas I'd had and took to other developers and took to other investors were home runs, that in fact, large companies like David Weekly came in and bought lots that I had identified, but I did not have the courage to sell it to somebody or to do it myself. And so it's like learning in the background that you finally get the confidence by doing it and seeing that you picked winners. And then also I learned that I did not want to have what I originally thought would be a portfolio of 10 to 20 single family investments. I did not want to. That is, I mean, I've gotten two winners, but it's not pain-free. So I love that, all that advice. And I would also say your strategy is exactly what I've been identifying for myself, but in a different manner. Talk about the cash flow and investing. And I think when people think about real estate is tangible. It's something that they can see, feel, somewhat understand. So it feels safe. But I think what people should also consider if they are looking to build cash flow are boring businesses, because boring businesses are not necessarily going to be highly appreciating assets, but they will give you the cash flow. You can then take the cash flow from this and you can buy assets to hold and appreciate over the long term. And I think those two strategies together is how people really can create wealth. It is scary. It is scary in there. And to build the cash flow, that's what I saw with the single family houses. You have to have a sizable amount that is going to replace a corporate salary. It just does not happen overnight. So with that in mind, the other thing I wanted to ask is obviously you've been investing long enough that you've been in several seasons of interest rates. So now where we are, how do you see it difference in leveraging with the higher interest rate economy? And how would that affect you if you were just starting out?
So real estate's just a math game, right? So interest rates are just one expense. It's a much higher expense now. So the deal still has to work. Here's the great thing about real estate. For one, it's been done for hundreds and hundreds of years. There is nothing new in real estate. That's the good and the bad. The good is that you just have to figure out why it has worked so long and do that. The bad is it's not very creative. People try and make it creative and it usually doesn't end well. Don't reinvent the wheel. No one will buy real estate and then 20 years later wish they hadn't, unless they can't hold on to it. So the key to real estate is that it needs to cash flow so that you can hold on to it and never be forced to sell. If you're able to sell it when you want to, you will never regret buying it. So what would force you to sell it is that you can't hold on to it. So if it's a single family house, you can't get a tenant and you can't make the mortgage, obviously you're probably not going to be able to keep it. And that's the risk with a single family house, is that one tenant moves out and you're 100% vacant, where, you know, if you have multiple, you have more flexibility. But the nice thing with the house is everybody needs a place to live and everybody prefer to live in a house than not. So ultimately, real estate is just a math game. So interest rates make it harder to find the deal because now your expenses are higher. So you have to buy it so that it will still cash flow, but it doesn't make it impossible. So that's the challenge. When rates were really low, real estate was still hard. What was hard was people were bidding up the prices so high that it was hard to buy it at a price that it would cash flow. Same ultimate problem, just a different lever that you have to pull. The interest rates will help the market, because all the people who are out there swimming naked and don't know what they're doing, they're going to get washed out, which gives the people who make this a business and study it and do what they do more opportunities. It just feels like less opportunity because this one expense lever is higher. But if it's not this, it will be something else. The main thing is, if you want to be thinner, skinnier, and healthier, hang around thinner, skinnier, healthier people, because you won't have to force yourself to change anything. You will want to assimilate to your environment, right? You're not going to want to show up and be like, oh, I'm the unhealthy one again. If you want to invest in real estate, get around people who are investing in real estate. They will make the next step feel easy. Whatever you want to do, do what it takes to surround yourself with it, because proximity 100% matters. And stop talking to people who don't invest in real estate about investing in real estate. They're the ones that are going to scare you to death, and they don't even know what they're talking about. They have not ever done it. They may have known someone. They may be fearful. They do not speak from experience. So get yourself around people who are doing what you want to do, regardless of what it is, and you will exponentially increase your chances of being successful. Just do it.
I love it. I love it. Well, Katie, thank you so much for being on the show. Guys, you need to follow Katie. Katie Develops on Instagram. Her website is katieneeson.com. We will have those in the show notes. Send us a note. Send us any questions. Let us know what you loved about the episode. Thank you so much, Katie. We appreciate all the feedback and guidance. Listen, this is the proximity where you can get the power and democratization of podcasts and news outlets and media has allowed for people to bring this information to you quickly, easily, cheaply, in this case, freely. So this is how you can get close to people, is following them on social media, listening to what they produce, reading articles that they write. Okay. That is how, if you cannot get in the room with the people, and then with real estate and many other things, you can find summits, you can find organizations to join and get that proximity where you can. Remember, invest in yourself, invest a little bit of money to get the proximity if you need to, if you know that you are looking for a change in your life, okay? You have to just take action and do it. So keep getting clear on what it is you want. You cannot buy back the most important and invaluable resource, which is your time. So every day that you wait, wishing and hoping and praying, is a day that you could be doing. So get out there and do it. Thanks a lot, Katie. We'll see you later. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you want to create a career you love, get the salary you deserve, and build the confidence to live life on your own terms, sign up for my free newsletter where you'll get actionable tips to raise your worth, build your wealth, create freedom, and create a life you absolutely love. Head over to crystalwaremedia.com to sign up or click the link in the show notes and join thousands of others making their dreams a reality. Whether you are just embarking on the journey or well on your way, the Worthful newsletter has something for you. See you next week.